Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome back to another episode of Musings on Madison here on the Second City Hockey Podcast Network. And I think maybe for the first time since we started calling this Musings on Madison, we have a full 82 NHL game season to talk about. And I'm pretty excited about that. I'm your host, Dave Melton, site manager here at Second City Hockey. You can find me on Twitter at @SCH_DaveM. I've got all my usual line mates with me this evening, so let's not wait around any longer and bring them all in. Up first, the analytics darling of Second City Hockey, probably just as blue for the same reasons as me, it's Shepherd Price.
Hi. You say that, and then it turns out that just as in 2019-20, Super COVID arrives, and it shuts down around Game 72 again.
Super COVID.
We're not getting any games.
Please. We had COVID, and then we had Delta, and Delta was worse than COVID. And I can't have anything else. Delta seems like it's kind of hopefully calming down. Just stop. I know it's like the Sox lost. You were there. It sucked. I'll tell you, Game 3 was pretty cool, though.
Game 3 was cool. But Game 4, God damn it. Nobody knew how to hit for some reason. After scoring 12 runs in Game 3, nobody knew how to hit.
I'm going to spend the next... I'm going to spend the next 12 months just dreaming about what it'd be like if the White Sox knocked the Astros out of the playoffs.
Yeah.
And that's going to sustain me. I don't know if it's, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I am going to dream of it. That's all I got. That ends our White Sox discussion from this podcast because we're both too sad to talk about it anymore. So let's bring in the rest of the group. Also with us this evening, he is the Second City Hockey, what Ben Jorgensen is to Armor for Sleep. It is Mil Savage.
I was in a car underwater, but Milwaukee lost, so that fucking rules.
And after watching the White Sox today, I'm a basement ghost singing. So
yeah,
that's a joke for me, you, and maybe three other people listening to this.
COVID ruined my Armor for Sleep show because I had tickets and I still didn't end up getting to go because of the reschedule.
I had the exact same thing as you. I'm very upset. We could have hung out and had a beer.
Yeah, the $11 beer at the Metro and then sat downstairs. You can't hear any guitar. It's like a tradition unlike any other.
Where I love all the optimism just oozing out of us this evening. It's going to be great. And so just to see where it goes next, let's bring in the last part of the group this evening. She's the Second City Hockey Bull and Wall of Text. It is Betsy.
You guys were just talking about like maybe super COVID. And I'm like, I'm about to go to my first concert in like forever. So I'm like, I hope I'm safe. I I'm like double shot and I had COVID. So I hopefully I'm like super immune.
I think you're borderline superhero at that point.
But yeah, I get to go. I'm going to see Harry Styles.
My favorite part is you posted that in our Slack chat. And my initial thought, which I think I put it in the chat, was who is the hell?
And my initial thought is lucky.
I know. I was like, Shay's the only one that's going to get this.
Well,
Dave and I are like going to see bands who haven't even toured since like 2007. So that's our fault.
Exactly.
Miserable ass people.
We are the Statler and Waldorf of this podcast. Which is another reference for old people.
Which is wild because I'm the Muppets fan, probably.
No, I mean,
who's not a Muppets fan?
That's the joke my brother makes when him and I are sitting up in our usual 329, like screaming at the team.
Soon, Mill.
But have fun at Harry Styles, LBR.
I will.
I keep getting Harry Styles confused. There's a guy who works for ESPN who's, I think, he's like one of the big college football guys, and his name's Harry Lyles. And I keep thinking they're the same person, and they are very much not.
Go ahead.
I was saying, when I hear Harry, I just think of Harry Kane and I get scared.
I don't know who either one of those people you just said was. yeah, that's why I'm just excited because I've been to like Ariana and Tay Swift and everybody's concert, and there's always like screaming teenagers there, and I'm going to be in a box for this concert. So I'm excited that I will have like a special bar.
And high roller. Oh man.
No. I got them through work.
Ooh.
So free.
That's still pretty cool.
I won like the ticket draw. So I was like, yeah. So hopefully not only will I be at least a little bit more protected because I'll be in like a box and not with swarming masses. I mean, there will still be obviously people other than me and the two friends that get to come with me. But also free bar, you know, bar like on that section. And
go on.
I'm always like, and you, there's a, you know, they all have their own like bathrooms. You don't have to like, that's a weird thing to like, but yeah. It's obviously.
See,
like,
the problem is you're going to enjoy this experience too much and you're never going to be able to go back.
Well,
to being among the peasants.
Sometimes like when I go to hockey games in other cities, I try to get box seats instead because I hate waiting in lines for anything. I don't like lines. I think we've gone over this before, but
I think we have.
Dude, I got spoiled. Like, I went to 3 wrestling shows with really good seats, and my next 2 are super nosebleedy. And I'm like, oh man, but what can you do?
Hey, the last show you saw was at the United Center where the Chicago Blackhawks are going to be playing 41 of their 82 games this year. So, you guys want to talk about some hockey?
Yeah.
Oh, by the way,
Segway season. Here we go.
Is like a spaceship. I never sat downstairs since they put it in, and I was 5 rows behind where the visitor bench is, but obviously it's different setup. And I looked up and I was like, "Holy God, is that going to fall and kill us?" It's too big.
Just make sure you're not sitting too close. Then I guess just.
I guess you guys can request charts on it.
So, hey, the 2021-2022 Blackhawks, which is never not going to be impossible to say, but their season gets started Wednesday night. They're playing the Colorado Avalanche in Colorado, where I think it's fucking snowing right now. So that's going to be fun. So it's definitely hockey season because it's snowing in part of the United States. I don't really have anything specific to ask you guys because we've talked about this in Slack. We've had all our previews up at secondcityhockey.com. I guess the general thing I want to attack this evening, and we'll start with Shepard. Just what are you expecting from the Blackhawks this season?
New, because we're doing like one word, right? My word.
Well,
is
it doesn't
new.
Have to be one word, but one word's if new's a good word.
Because they have a new number one defenseman. They have a new number one goaltender. They have a new, well, returning, but compared to 2021, he's a new first line center. Okay. I'm still referring to the Jonathan Toews line as the first line because I fully expect that to be the line that gets the first line matchups so that the Kane to Brinkat duo can exploit whatever weaknesses another team has. Yeah, it's going to look new. It's going to hopefully be a little bit new. There will probably be a new interim head coach halfway through the season. I'm fully expecting. I'm fully expecting new.
New interim. That's I really wish I should have timed it to see how long it was going to take for that to happen. And actually, this actually brings me to one thing that I kind of an optimistic thing I have related to that. So I think, like, because of all the things you mentioned, Jeopard, that there's so many new things with the Blackhawks this year, it does feel like expectations are significantly higher, that they're not expecting to miss the playoffs again. And if they are, there's going to be repercussions. And I feel like if we get to like Thanksgiving, maybe Christmas, and they're not competitive, he's getting fired and there will be a new coach. Yeah. So yeah. I think the optimistic take that I can offer you is that if they're playing well, they don't fire the coach because they're playing well, which is good. And if they're playing bad, they fire the coach and maybe things turn around.
I'm just bummed out because Rocky Thompson is medically unable to get the
vaccine. See, I tried to vaccine. Bring the positivity.
He's unable to get the vaccine, so it can't be Rocky Thompson this season.
All right. Well, I mean, well, I feel like it's just going to be Mark Crawford, but...
Ugh.
But I guess...
I'm tired of old white men. Considering the fact that
well, they got a young white man, and he didn't do much better.
I know, but considering the fact that Tony La Russa just lost us a series, I'm kind of tired of old white men.
Well, he's not a man; he's a goblin.
that's a good word for it. Betsy, what about you? What are you expecting out of the Blackhawks this season?
Well, wild card is a great. One word, because okay. Not only do I think that might be where they finish, but they could go any direction. I think they did. Ooh, I think the personnel is better this year than they have been. I don't think it's like the best it could be, mostly because I think players like Kurashev, who are going to be big for the Hawks, he might not be like at his, like, he's so young, he might not be there yet. Or Doc, I don't think he's going to be at his like elite top level necessarily this year, though both of them will take steps towards it kind of situation. But yeah, I think that it's hard to predict what's going to happen with them. And I think it could go any way. I think, like Shay said, there could be a coach change in the middle of the season. It could be a wild season. Who knows what's going to happen? My worst fear though, is that like last year, goaltending like mirages everybody into thinking the team is good when it's not. I want like concrete definitive steps taken at the team level, not just an individual player level. But that, you know, could happen. I mean, the players could be good despite the coach. I don't know.
What does that look like for you? Like the improvement at the team level? Cause I feel like that's something that we talked about. And I think we all know what each other means, but I don't know if people who aren't the four of us knows what that means. So what do you mean by that when you say improvement at the team level?
So last year, of course, they were terrible at suppressing, preventing quality shots against specifically. They weren't good at volume shot suppression either, but you can get away with that a little bit if you can at least keep quality down, but they were like the worst team last year in certain models that like rate that kind of stuff. So defensively they're not good, and you can't go far if you're not at least break even defensively. Like there have been teams that have won the cup that are like just okay defensively, but then their offense is so good that they can push them further. The Blackhawks could have a good enough offense. I think there's a lot of players on the team that could break, you know, do very well. But if their defense doesn't come up, they need to, it's just not going to happen. So at a team level, cohesively, all of them have to do better with puck possession and limiting quality chances against. Those are the two things that they just have to do better. And it can't be an individual, this player does these things well, but if it doesn't go into the team and doesn't help as a unit, then it doesn't really matter eventually, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mill, what about you? What are you expecting out of the 21-22 Blackhawks?
I think they're going to be riding a pretty fine line the whole year of kind of will they, won't they make the playoffs? Because, like, there's definitely enough talent there to do it, but they have a lot of holes. So it's going to be one of those things. But instead of, like, last year at the deadline where they kind of were sellers, I think they're going to be more in that buying market. I don't know what they can buy, but I think that's what they're going to be looking to do.
And I guess with the, I guess the idea of like buying at the trade deadline, I've been thinking about this a lot today, trying to put a ceiling on how, or a cap on how high the ceiling is for this team, because like they're certainly capable of being a playoff team. I think everyone can agree to that. Like they have the ability to be a playoff team based off the players they have. There's a significantly higher ceiling than there was last season. After Taze and Doc went down, the whole thing kind of went to shit. So I guess that would be my question for you, Mills. Do you have an idea of how, like, optimistic best case, like the farthest you could see this team going?
I mean, I think it'd be a wild card scenario, just because when you have to play the teams in their division, even if it's only 3-4 times, whatever it is now, 3 times, they have problems competing with some of these teams based on just suppressing shots, and like even like a Nashville, who I think is going to blow, can outskate them. And then if you get into the first round in either wild card, you're probably going to have to play Vegas or Colorado. So to me, I think that's good night. It's probably the farthest they can go, unless they could do a few different things. Obviously, we talk about the coaching, but they do need like a couple of different players for me too. I think they could really use, they're not going to get them, but they could use a Mark Stone type of player, you know?
Well, I think 31 teams in the NHL could probably use a guy like that.
Well, the reason I say that is because they're not going to be able to run Taves two ways like that. He's either going to have to score or he's going to have to play defense. And I don't know which one Colleton's going to want him to do, but I have a feeling he's going to want him out there scoring.
Yeah, but he doesn't use a – okay. My one thing that I want Colleton to do that he has not done super well with – like over the years, and it might be personnel that he just couldn't do it. I don't think that's true, but you know, maybe that's his mindset. Have a checking line that actually checks.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I agree.
That would help. I know Shay said earlier, like Taves will be taking higher matchups. Colleton doesn't dictate that usually. Like he kind of just lets the other coach do it. So who are they going to face more? Like it's probably going, it might be Kane more. Like it depends on how dangerous Taves Kubalik end up being, which I think they will be. But even in this season when they were together and Kane was on another line, Kane still technically got, Taves got the highest, but then it was Kane. And then Kubalik was actually a lot farther down in terms of quality comp. So I don't know how he's going to roll his lines, but have a shutdown line. They have the players to do it.
No, I totally agree. And I said that today in my piece about the bottom six,
yes,
how they have guys, but they just don't do it.
Yeah.
But I think my perspective wasn't more of matching lines, but something Colleton does seem to do is like, if they can tilt the ice and they're going down, okay, we're going to the offensive zone, he's going to make a change. He's thinking, oh, well, I'm going to throw these guys out. It's just kind of his weird mindset, you know? And I don't get it, because it's like, if the matchup's not there, then what are you doing? But, you know, what do I know?
What do any of us know, Mel?
Good question. Maybe we should re-listen to all these podcasts, won't they?
Don't. That sounds like a bad idea. Probably. I guess the thought, like, to build off of what you guys are talking about with, like, the forward lineup, like, I think one of you said, like, they have the personnel to have a pretty good forward group. I mean, if you make, you know, your top line, the way it's looking is going to be Taves, Kubalik, and Kurashev. Second line is going to be Johnson, Kane, DeBrincat. And then this, like, it's how you arrange the third and fourth line. If you put Doc with two offensively geared guys and try and score goals, and then your fourth line's like, I don't know, Carpenter, Kara, and Twistle, maybe? I don't know. I don't know which, whatever fourth line guy, whatever fourth liner you want here, but that's, I think that's the general idea, because that's when the Hawks were at their best. And what seems like a lot of good teams do in the NHL these days is they make three scoring lines and one checking line. And that's how you do everything. The checking line gets all defensive looks. And I don't know how optimistic I am that that's actually going to happen.
Yeah, but to your point, Dave, too, like that's a good point. Because if they had that kind of line set up and coaches are worrying about the Taves and Kane lines, and then you have that checking line out there, the Doc line can basically go bum slay.
And actually, I'm glad you brought that up, because I'm going to swing this around back to Shepherd, because I feel like Kirby Doc is probably the most important player for the Hawks this year. And I think that's now it's like a short term and long term thing, because if Kirby Doc turns into what we all hope he can be, like his spot, like he could really solidify that third line, or maybe he bumps up to the second line and plays with Kane and DeBrincat on his wings. And then that just further solidifies the top six. And then Tyler Johnson slides down to the third line and wreaks havoc in the third line. So I guess, Shepard, the question I had for you would be just general, like, I guess, what does Kirby Doc need to do to be better?
Faceoffs.
Faceoffs would be a good start for sure.
Win more faceoffs. Score more, I think. Be on the ice more. Be healthy. Be able to take those steps would forward. Be
a great start.
Yes. Just be able to take those forward steps and develop more. To actually be able to have the opportunity to play would be a very nice first step. Besides that, like I would kind of debate Doc being the most important player, considering that Alex DeBrincat exists and probably is the future captain of the Chicago Blackhawks.
Well, I guess my thought would be that, like, not that I feel like we kind of know what DeBrincat is. Like, he's going to be awesome.
There's going to be a question, though, because, like, his shooting percentage was 20% last year. And it's not a fall. So how far does it fall?
But, it seems like a better Kirby Doc is what would solidify the depth of this team, at least from a forward perspective.
Right, and he's going to get those lesser matchups, which if Jeremy Colliton's matching lines finally, the ability for him and his line and whoever his line mates are, whether that's Dylan Strome or Phil Kurashev or Adam Gaudette or Henrik Borgstrom, most likely Brandon Hagel, whoever it is going to be important for them to go out and score. Like score at a consistent rate. It doesn't have to be like every game. That'd be nice. It doesn't have to be every game, but like score at a consistent rate that like helps the team. And that's what I think we need to see out of Kirby Doc this season, is the ability to score at a consistent rate, and not in his last full season where he went like 20, 30 games without scoring a point. I don't think you can see that this season.
Yeah. I don't, I'm going to direct this question towards Betsy, because I know she's the one that always preaches patience with younger players and try not to get too down on any guys that are, you know, he'll turn 21 on January 21st, like right in the middle of the season. So like getting too down on him at this point in his career does seem a little pessimistic. And I don't want to say I'm down or worried about him. It's just, like, I guess my eyebrow is raised in terms of like a little bit of doubt is creeping in, because he just kind of hasn't looked like a number three overall pick when so many other guys were just immediately like the guys. So I guess, Betsy, like maybe talk me out of what I'm saying, or correct me if I'm wrong, or whatever. Just your reaction to Kirby Doc things.
I'll say that there were some issues with him last season, but I think most of that was like lack of playing for so long.
One wrist.
Yeah. And like having to get up from that, because a lot of his underlying stuff was great. You know, like that's his underlying micro stats were very good. His passing was very good. His shooting wasn't the best. Like he wasn't shooting as much. But again, that could be a wrist thing, like being able to pass and shoot are slightly different motions for your wrist. So he did great with forechecking. His transitions into the zone and puck retrieval were great. So he was doing a lot of things that were good. And it reminds me a little bit of DeBrincat's down season, where everybody was like, oh no, he was a one hit wonder. Technically, he had already had two seasons, whatever.
Yeah, two hit wonder.
And people were like, maybe those were all like fluffed seasons. But no, he was still doing all this stuff under the surface, you know, under surface level stuff really well. So it was like, no, he's going to rebound and he's not even really going to have to change that much. He will, because he's the Brinkhead and he's going to want to get even better. But I think Doc could do that too. I think we just need to be patient and hope that those good behaviors ultimately end up having good results. They might not, but it looks like it could be a thing. And again, always going to pronounce his name wrong, but Couturier, how you say his name?
Sean Couturier.
Couturier. I'm never going to pronounce it right. Ever, ever, ever. French names, just not my thing. Give me a Russian name, even a Finnish name. I could say those fine. Look at his numbers. A lot of he was kept at like the 3-4C for a while. And now he could be win a Selkie often. So, and put up a bunch of points. So it's like one of those things. Just be patient. It could happen. I'm very optimistic about Doc.
Yeah, I think there were a few rushes and a few like plays through the neutral zone that Doc made where he just kind of finagled his way around a clogged up neutral zone and a few other zone entries he had that like raised an eyebrow, like, all right, like maybe we're going to get the Kirby Doc we've all been hoping for. I think the other thing is just, we were a little bit spoiled by, you know, Taves being such an immediate impact and Kane being such an immediate impact when they were high draft picks. And I guess like, the Hawks haven't really had any other top. Well, Boquist, who's dead to us now, I guess.
I mean, just remember, Taves stayed at college for a year, and Patrick Kane was one of the oldest guys in his draft.
That's the other factor that I always forget.
So think about Doc started a year-ish before those guys, and he was hurt when he would have had his second year breakout. That's why when he did that stuff in the bubble, and everybody was like, oh, and everybody sat up and was like, maybe this could be it. Maybe it could have been it if he had gotten injured. So hopefully this year will be it.
Fingers crossed. I guess like is there a good barometer to check in? I mean, like obviously like the quarter polls 20 games into the season, but is there a specific part where if Doc was not performing where your concerns would start to go up? Or is it not even till like next season?
It's not really even until next season.
Okay.
In terms of points. I think a lot, like I said, a lot of his trends underneath and behaviors have to be good because otherwise there's nothing to build upon. So if he's just out of whack completely like that, then yeah, you start to get concerned even if you still should wait till he's like 22, 23-ish. You know, those are the years when players really start establishing themselves. On average, I know you're right. We're spoiled, but I think this could be his year. I'm just, like I said, I'm just really optimistic. I'm also optimistic, but patient.
Okay.
those are my default settings right now.
All right. Well, we're going to put a pause right here. Oh, cause we talked a lot about forwards. We haven't really talked a lot about defense or maybe even some goalie talk. And we're going to do that after this quick timeout. So come on back on the other side of this break to hear more about all that.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to cars.com. It's magical.
Welcome back to Musings on Madison. And as promised before the break, we wanted to talk about some of the other aspects of the Blackhawks roster that we really didn't get into in the first half of our discussion here. So the Blackhawks defense obviously had a significant makeover in the offseason with Seth Jones coming in via trade, Jake McCabe signing in as free agent. Nikita Zadorov's gone, and Mill's so disappointed about that.
You know it.
Nicholas Beaudin looks like he's destined for Rockford for probably a majority of the season. Ian Mitchell is starting early because of a few injuries to Caleb Jones, another new addition, and Wyatt Kalinuk. But he seems like he's going to be heading back to Rockford for most of the season after those guys get healthy. And Eric Gustafson's here again, in case you missed him a ton. So it's a wildly different look. It's going to be paired up a lot differently. And I just want to throw it to Mill first, I guess. Anything that stands out to you or anything that has raised your eyebrow about the Blackhawks defense that they're expected to run out on the ice this season?
I mean, this is a year where they went out and paid a guy a lot of money and they signed another guy for some decent money and they retooled. And, you know, you could say what you want about them as individuals, but basically the blame has been it's not the system, it's the personnel. Well, you have a personnel now, so we got to see how it goes. Because I don't buy it, but that's what we're being told. And, you know, that's all. I'm not going to get in over my head and start a Lee Ilya rant here like I thought I would. But, but no, seriously, though, I mean, like, I don't want to go out of my way to complain. But, like, even in preseason, we, you know, like, I think Betsy pointed out, like, they weren't going behind the net as much, which is good. But they still were just letting, you know, rolling the red carpet out down the slot.
And the other thing,
I have concerns.
The other thing that Betsy has pointed out to me, it's at some point during the last couple of years that I can now never unsee, is that the Blackhawks never deny zone entries. They always allow people, the opposing rushers, to skate. If they're coming up the wall and they're near the blue line, they're getting into the zone. And it seems like the Hawks never step up and challenge that zone entry. And it is
like, what does Averman say? What is this, the NBA?
Exactly.
Driving to the basket.
But there was a play during one of the preseason games, and I wish I had taken a GIF or a video of it. But somebody was skating 1-on-4. All his teammates were going for a line change. The Hawks had 4 guys back, and they still just kind of casually let the guy stroll into the zone. It's like, I'm guessing it's a systemic thing. Like, that's how they are being coached, because everyone's doing it. But it seems like such a passive, not good way to play hockey, for lack of a better word, even though I should be able to think of a better word than not good.
Joel would never.
Joel would never, because that's what made the Hawks so good for so long. Betsy, I guess I'll swing it over to you, since we mentioned that. Like, systemic issues, I'm sure, in there as well, but just your overall thoughts, observations, or feelings about the Blackhawks' blue line for the upcoming season.
Well, on paper, I think people were kind of putting Jones with McCabe, and they looked, again, just 2 games, but they didn't look good together. They were very jointed. And I'm one of those people that's like, well, maybe they need time, but they looked so disjointed. I was, you know, like, my gut reaction was, get them away from each other. Like, normally I'm all about, like, yeah, it's fine. But no, they were no. And then McCabe and Murphy looked great together. So, and DeHaan and Jones looked fine together. So I'm like, maybe that can work. Though people need to not overreact to DeHaan being on the first pairing. I'm doing air quotes. You can't see this. Because it's the same way that, like, Marian Hossa was on the first line, but Patrick Kane always got the higher minutes. So it's not really numbered. He's going to be up there, but he's not going to get, like, top 2 minutes if that happens. So,
well, you can have him with Jones too, because Jones can move.
Yeah, that's what I was like. That was one of the things I think we talked about last year, and they were like, Shea had mentioned it in his preview, and I mentioned it in my preview. DeHaan has worked pretty well with a bunch of guys that can move, that are very mobile, and he can be the stay at home guy. Mm-hmm. And that can work really well with Jones, you know, and they seem to just mesh a little bit better. And McCabe and Murphy, before the final push with the Wild at the end, when they, like, you know, score effects were happening, they were above water and killing it. So I
think, like, McCabe and Murphy might be temporary, because Kalanuck and Murphy make a lot more sense to me.
I mean, that could happen too, and I think that would be great. Then you could have it balanced out in the 3 pairings. I think there's a lot of options, more options this year that could make sense than in years past. Because I think even Caleb Jones and Stillman could move up with their skill sets in a way, because they've meshed with guys before. Like, Stillman has worked with other guys, and so it's a nice little, like, hodgepodgey thing. I don't know what Gustafson's gonna do exactly for however long he's around. And I had already, like, totally sold myself on Mitchell playing in the AHL this season. He's only 22. I think he's, like, not too far off from having turned 20. Like, he turns 23 in January. So that's a good, these are good ages to still be in the AHL and learning. So I'm fine with that. I still have, like, I'm so optimistic about him. I know some people are really down on him. I don't think that's fair necessarily. Transitioning from college to NHL is hard, but I like the personnel that they have. I think they could do well. I won't go more into the system, but I think the personnel could do well. So we'll see what happens. But I like them a lot more than I thought I would. And I think that there's more versatility to them, despite the fact that they're left heavy. Enough guys play on the right that I think it could work.
Yeah, I felt like one of the bigger leaders of the Ian Mitchell bandwagon. I would like to speak on behalf of the bandwagon and say we were a little, maybe slightly underwhelmed by last season, but we're not, you know, the bandwagon's not broken down. We're still driving. We just might have dialed it down to first gear after trying to crank it up to third gear last year. That's all.
Yes. As another member of the Ian Mitchell bandwagon, I'm happy for him to develop and get the first fair minutes with Nicholas Beaudin and Rockford. But I would like to see him play a few games in Chicago this season.
I guess my concern with Ian Mitchell, and it's not entirely fair to him, but like I feel like this is just the way the Blackhawks have gone the last decade, is like it feels like any guy that doesn't make an immediate impact never works out. Like that's just there's, and we can go down the list. There's so many guys that just kind of like hovered around the NHL level, got some games, didn't hang on, and then like within the next year or two, they were traded away. Part of that is because of how good the roster used to be, and there wasn't many spaces available and all that. So I understand it's a different era. Trying to be more patient. So forgive me if I sometimes the patience isn't there, but I'm trying to develop it. It's a new era.
I mean,
go ahead.
Look at Forsling right now. First of all, he should never have, when he was with the Blackhawks. I know he like impressed Q, so that's the reason he made the team. He shouldn't have. He should have been put in the AHL for a little while just to like marinate a little bit, because he ended up doing really well for a while, but then, you know, crashing like some kids do. And I think Ian Mitchell started out pretty well last season and then he started crashing. Mm-hmm. And then they stuck. Forsling just never picked himself back up. They put him in the AHL and then he got let go. Now he's playing top four and with the Panthers, and he looked good last year. Like, I mean, I'm not talking about like he's like the greatest player ever, but he looked like a competent, confident top four defender. And it's okay to be patient. You don't have to like immediately get rid of these kids when they don't like break out, especially, I mean, it's weird that Bowman likes to jettison them so much when he loves reclamation projects. He loves to go pick up a 24, 25-year-old, you know, a 23 to 25-year-old that's like, oh, maybe they could do well. You know, that's how we got Kalynuk right now. And then that's how we've got Stillman. And that's how we've got Caleb Jones. I mean,
and who was the guy? There was a former top 10 pick that just got like granted permission to pursue a trade. Like Vitaly Kratsov, something like that?
Yes, Vitaly Kratsov.
Yeah. I couldn't remember how to say his name, but I just saw former top 10 pick, disgruntled by his own team, so expect him to be on the Blackhawks. Probably getting traded for Dylan Strome within the next
What?
Huh?
Strome,
they're going to kill Strome.
The Rangers already have a Strome, too.
Well, sibling reunions are a big thing lately, so... This hasn't happened, guys. Sorry.
In your brain?
That was just in my head. I'm just throwing
it. Yes, because Dylan Strome's on the trade bump block.
I didn't know if it had manifest. You made me like freak out for a second. I was going to be like, okay, I'm not really super into picking up another reclamation project.
Well, we're going to trade one for another one because
that's what I'm saying. It's like, we'd be in the same situation. Cause the whole reason they want to trade Strome is that he is good enough to play in the NHL, but they don't want him on the roster right now. So if he's sitting, then that's a waste of him and space and everything like that. So they want to get rid of him. Well, this guy comes in. Is he going to knock out anybody?
It's going to be Strome and Nylander for Kratsov.
I mean, Strome must have hit somebody's Bentley in the parking lot or something. I don't know why they don't like him. Like, I mean, what the hell, you know?
I can understand why they don't like him specifically for certain things. I just think he was misused last year. Like,
but and a lot of them were misused last year.
Exactly. In the two previous years, he had 50-point projected seasons. And that's not nothing.
No, it's good. Solid. Yeah.
Yeah, it's second line production. And I'm not saying he could always be a 50-point player, but I just want to say, like, what if Doc never gets 50 points or, like, at least like that's those things, those three overalls. It's like, what if something bad happens? At least you got that high once
before. Kane had an MVP year and they were rolling Artem Anisimov's wide ass out with him. Like, do you think Dylan Strome can't skate with him?
Yeah. You know? It's the Dylan Strome situation has been confounding for years. And like, he was not good last season, but last season, pandemic, weird year, hard to take any. I'm still like withholding any conclusions that might have been made from last year's season for that reason, because it was so weird. But the Strome situation, and Pierre LeBrun reported today that like the Hawks are open to trading him, which I feel like is at least the 10th time that has been reported that the Hawks are open to trading him. So,
would you say he lives on the trade block?
Yeah, he owns real estate on the trade block, because that's where
they're going to post him for sale on Facebook.
Craigslist.
Like lightly used.
We were talking about defense. I was trying to think if there's another question. Like,
you derailed us.
Yeah, it happens a lot. We always come back to the forwards. I guess they're more interesting to talk about than the defensemen. But I guess this is where we're going to pause and zoom out a little bit, because again, as we talked about at the top, that the Hawks seem like they're in a more win now mode. And I don't think any of us are calling the Hawks cup contenders here, but I think for several years, I know I've been beating the drum of the Hawks have, if they're going to win another cup with this group, they got to do it probably pretty soon, because you probably got to do it before Patrick Kane is no longer the Patrick Kane we've been watching for the last 15 years. And it feels like it may not be that far away. I'm just trying.
He just set his career high in as a primary assist per 60. Like, he became a way better playmaker. And yes, his goals scoring dipped to last season, but that's because of his shooting percentage just dropping off the face of the map. Like, he is still, I think he is very much still Patrick Kane, and he will very much be Patrick Kane for a while.
He did that with a wrist injury, like a lingering injury or whatever. They might not have said it was wrist, but I don't know why I automatically think that. But either way, lingering injury, and he still did really well. So,
the main point I'm trying to get here to is that, like, do you guys see this team becoming that good within the next, like, let's go by 2025, which I feel like is a little generous for, like, say, like, maybe Kane starts declining then and it gets really precipitous in the back half of the decade. Like with the main pieces that you have in place now that are under contract for a pretty good term, like DeBrinket's, he's going to need new paper eventually, but Jake McCabe's not going anywhere. Seth Jones isn't going anywhere. I imagine Taves and Kane are going to get re-upped. I can't envision them going anywhere else. But all these other guys that are going to be around for the next 2, 3, 4 seasons, like, how good can you see this team being?
It depends on how the money is used for the next few years. Cause what are the Taves and Kane contracts look like?
Yeah. And also you said the 2025 season. Cause like, yeah, there's like a chance that like half of like 3/4 of these people aren't here.
Well,
Seth Jones isn't going anywhere, but like, other than Murphy, like Murphy, McCabe, and Seth Jones are still signed in the 24-25 season. But there's not a single forward that's signed. Like, okay. Obviously, DeBrincat and Doc will be, but like,
let's reasonably assume Taves Kane, DeBrincat, like DeBrincat gets more money, Taves and Kane get less money because they're going to be older.
Going to be 37.
I guess the whole point is like, big, like, are you guys optimistic about a long term, like, about this team being potentially a playoff team this season and then being a consistent playoff team for the next 3 to 4 seasons and maybe working their way up to cup contention?
No, they can't draft and develop. I am firmly on the side of long term. It is best for Sorosat Stam moment to go now, just so they can get somebody who can draft and develop players.
I was about to say, I don't think if they make it past, they have to make it past. Like this, they have to get to the second round, like this year or next,
mm-hmm.
or Bowman is gone, which is good for the org. But I just it's hard for me to even think, because I just don't think past the coaching, and that's maybe not fair. But I just currently have no view of the coach propelling them to that. I think maybe the team could do well, but certain people would have to take huge steps. Doc, Kurashev, I think even Kubelik could get better. He has gotten better every year. So I think he could be in his prime. And then the defense, so it's really hard to predict that far out, because I just can't see past who's in charge of those types of decisions.
What about you, Mil? What's your right now?
The other night when Jonathan Toews played damn near 25 minutes in a preseason game, that tells me everything I need to know. Because no, seriously, look at how they used Duncan Keith last year. The coaching staff is, apparently the coaching staff are doing that. I don't know if Bowman has influence on that or not, but it's you have to was already said, you have to develop players, you have to be able to draft, but also you have to know how to use them. And I don't think most of these guys are going to be here in a few years. I think this is a quick fix, as a, it could be for on ice or off ice reasons, but I think this is a distraction. Hey, we're going to compete. I don't think that these guys are going to be here long term, aside from maybe DeBrinket, hopefully Doc, those kind of guys. But this is they'd have to do it soon, and that's very difficult.
Yeah.
It'd have to be next year.
I guess to answer my own question, I think the main thing that I've come around to is that so many things have to go right for them to be a legitimate contender that it almost feels impossible, because it's quite a list of things that need to happen in a positive way for it to work. And I guess there's also a small part of me that's the Hawks just had 3 cups in 6 years, and maybe they're just due for some misses for a while. So maybe this is just the market correction from how much fun the 2010s were.
That only happens in Chicago, though, because good teams usually at least make the playoffs.
That's true. I mean, half the league makes the freaking playoffs.
Yeah, but look at all these Pittsburgh teams. They won a cup with no defense even.
It's Brian Dumoulin existed on those teams. I don't think it's fair to call them no defense.
No. I don't mean they had no, but I'm just saying all right, counterpoint. Hawks won in 2015 with 2 pairings, and Seabrook was pretty much on his way towards the bottom. They had Kyle Kaminsky skating in those final games, and they could, and Rundblad and whoever, TVR with a broken leg. They could still win. They had the talent, they had the coaching, they had the goaltending. What if Marc-Andre Fleury gets hurt? They're screwed. Kevin Lankinen looks like he's going to be solid, but not go win a final.
I mean, Cam Ward won a cup.
Yeah, but that was Cam Ward. That was coming out of a lockout, and
Yeah, but it's magic. It's magic could strike. You never know. It's what Dave was saying. It's if so many little things have to make sense and have to work and have to it has to be kind of a lightning strike kind of situation.
Is that a pun?
Expecting.
I think I would be more optimistic if the last few seasons didn't play out the way they did. But I'm just thinking about tomorrow night after the second period going into intermission, where the Hawks are getting outshot 40-7 and Colleton's giving some kind of Goonies Never Say Die speech. And it's that's great attitude, but you have to know how to win hockey games in this league. They still have to win games.
I mean, I totally agree on that part. I go back through these shades, Jekyll and Hyde feeling about this team. I really like a lot of the people on it. I'm really excited to see them play. I think they could do something. And then I go, but can they do, what?
There's always a but.
To your point, though, I think that's why I'm optimistic or pessimistic about them firing the coach. I think that they have a lot of talent and they're going to hang around.
Yeah, that's, I guess that was my worst fear.
The good news is, if you want the coach fired, they're also in one of the toughest divisions in hockey. Maybe the toughest division in hockey. And 5 of these teams are going to make it to the playoffs. That doesn't necessarily guarantee that the Blackhawks are one of those five teams, because Dallas is still tough and St. Louis is still tough.
I could see, I could see the Hawks, like, I feel like it's like Colorado, St. Louis, and Minnesota seem like they're going to be in.
Okay. And, well, okay. The top three are going to be Colorado, Winnipeg, and
well, okay. Winnipeg. All right. So the top four in no particular order: Colorado, Winnipeg, St. Louis, and Minnesota.
But I feel optimistic about Dallas because they're healthy.
I still feel like Dallas was fool's gold from 2 years ago, and I still like. I feel like that is the team that if the Hawks are going to overtake them, like I think Nashville is going to suck. I think they were. The run that they went on last year saved them from the implosion that they needed to enforce upon themselves. And it's going to come due this year. Arizona sucks out loud. And I think if they're going to pass a team, they could pass Dallas and sneak into a playoff spot. I think it's there for them to be taken.
Whether or not they do. Not impressed by St. Louis. Like I just don't. Last year they were good.
Yeah, I think they're kind of garbagey. But let me ask you guys a question: If Coach Jeremy doesn't get canned early, and they go into a situation late in the spring where they have to win a couple games like they had before, and they lose, and that dictates them missing the playoffs, do you think that costs him his job this year, or is it like, oh well, we're coming?
No, I do.
Yeah, I think they have to be a playoff team this year. I sincerely don't know if they are.
That's because I think so too. I think Bowman needs that to keep his job if he can anyway, so he'll blame the coach. But it's just like they have shown no accountability.
Yeah. And the only position while we're. While I'm making a totally not well done segue, I don't have any goalie thoughts. I mean, Marc-Andre Fleury seems like one of the most delightful professional athletes that has existed in a while. And I am ecstatic that I get to watch and cheer for him this season. I hope he's just as good as he was last year. We'll see how well he is behind the defense he has to play with. But
he's playing behind some bad defenses in the past. So
yeah, I believe Pittsburgh team we've been talking about.
Let's talk about how Vegas was in the bottom 10.
Don't talk bad about that Vegas quality as much as they need to.
You only want the stats when they work in your favor, eh?
It doesn't matter. Vegas plays in the AHL division.
Yeah, they could throw their AHL team out there and probably at least make it to the playoffs in that division.
Vegas is going to have 164 points. Last
season
was
a much different season because they had to play 7 games against Colorado, 8 uh-huh. games against Colorado.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I feel like they're going to be going until April.
Good. He did have to face more harder shots at a larger quantity than usual behind Vegas last year. And it's part of the reason he got the Vezina is because he kind of thrives on some of that a little bit. The problem, of course, is that it also wears him down, which is what happened to him in the playoffs. So it's
then
like
Leonard goes in and has a poo-poo game.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, Fleury is great. He can carry a team to a certain thing, but while he's carrying them, that's hurting him long-term. So it's good. And we need Lincoln in to be good.
I feel like 50 games is the number for Fleury. Like try and keep him under 50 or at, or
Then you don't want to do anything in the playoffs. You just want to get to the playoffs.
Yeah. I think he should be playing less than that.
Okay. I thought I was being generous at 50, but all right, that's fair.
I think you give all four goalies 20 games.
we finally see what Colin Delia can do with 20 games.
Hey, what if he's awesome?
I think you play closer to like 2013 split from Crawford and Emery. Not quite as split evenly split, but yeah, play on that. The problem, we said this in the last podcast, is that Jeremy likes to play the hot hand.
Yes.
And that can work against the maintenance. Like, that's my, like, there's a worry there with, like Shay said earlier, playing Taves too many minutes, like you did Keith last year. Well, he needs to be maintained better than that. I think the same thing is going to be true of Tyler Johnson. And I think it's going to be true of Patrick Kane.
Bring Cap.
Yeah, you can't, you've got to maintain these guys a little bit better than maybe has been done in the past. And some of the older guys, especially, yeah, you're going to have to figure that out a little bit better. And Fleury's one of them. So,
and I, like, we do get a full 82 game season, which, like, you would think that would stretch the schedule out a little bit, but also the Olympic break kind of compresses it again. So,
yep.
Yeah. And a lot of our top guys are going to be going to the Olympics. Even if
let's talk about how many, how
not a lot. Okay. A lot is not great. We know Kane, DeBrinket, and Seth Jones are all going for sure. I think Fleury's going, but he's not going to play very much. Kubalik's going probably. Kuryshev is definitely going.
Borgstrom?
I'm just trying to think of, like, well, he does,
like, European guys that there aren't as many of, I guess. I mean,
there's not as many. The Finnish team might be kind of, it's very top heavy. Like, Reichel's probably going to go, even though he's in the AHL. I mean, that's not going to affect. They love, like, they love him over there. So, there's a,
you might play with Draisaitl.
Yeah, like, there's a decent number. It's just, I don't think unless Taves has, like, a ridiculously great season, but he might decline.
He's going to go home, and you know what? He's going to be chasing the magic dragon.
I was like, you know what could be a lot of things.
Canada could just ice a million teams. So there's just no real need for him.
They should have their own cup. Well, they have, but you know what I mean. Like, they just leave them out. We need more Europeans anyways.
Yeah. All right. Well, since we were talking Olympic break, we got a few questions. I think we can wrap this up. I don't know if we're going to have time to get to our futé, because I know Shepard wants to go watch his Golden Knights welcome the Seattle Kraken to the NHL. So we got a few ones from Twitter. Jordan Pierce 7 wants to know, how much will the back end improve with the offseason acquisitions, specifically with reducing high percentage goal chances? Which sounds like a no from Mill. Betsy, what about you?
Again, I think personnel wise, I think they could do it.
System wise,
it's the latter half of the question. Problem.
I think they're going to improve. I think they absolutely will, because you have a bunch of guys who've played in the NHL before, as opposed to all the youngsters that played last season. How much it improves is probably going to be underwhelming.
Yeah,
that's gonna
Jake McCabe is very good was last season very good at preventing high danger chances. Although, again, small sample size with only 13 games played, but like they could be better. You're right. The question is how much better.
The personnel is better, but I just smarked at the back half of the question, because it's like the high danger chances are going to come if they don't keep people out of coming straight down Broadway every time. That's all I'm saying. Okay.
There you go. Asked and answered. Stephen D. Schrader, who's handles at Schrader Law, looks like he's a lawyer. So in case any of you guys get sued, we have a Twitter follower who can help us out. Without looking and assuming that Strome does not play tomorrow night, guess how many of the top 16 skaters in total minutes from last year's team are playing tomorrow night? Also could be tonight, depending on when you're listening to this podcast. So how many guys from that were in the top 16 in terms of time on ice from last season are playing tonight?
Playing tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
Playing Wednesday. Well, the season when this opener is, on Wednesday.
When this is released, yes.
Yeah.
Let's make a list. Patrick Kane, Alex DeBrincat, Connor Murphy, Calvin DeHaan.
Yeah. Like, is it total average game time?
It's average time on ice, and we'll set the bar at 10 games played. And that doesn't
mean Dominic Kubalik.
Doc. Illman.
Doc was hurt, because I'm not.
Doc was hurt so much. Is it average time on ice or total time on ice?
Average.
Yeah, and if you count 10 games or more, he played 18. It's Kane, DeBrincat.
Total minutes.
Oh, total minutes.
Jeez.
So not Doc.
Oh, okay, so Kane, DeBrincat, Murphy, obviously, Kubalik, Dahan, Hagel, Kurashev?
Yeah.
Kurashev.
Strom?
Strom is...
Well, I think Strom is counted out.
Okay,
Strom's out.
Assuming he doesn't
seven.
Play.
Seven. Would be my guess.
Are we missing anybody else?
Seven.
I'm trying to count this up as we're talking. Three. This is great radio.
I don't understand why anybody cares about this.
Seven.
because it shows how inconsistent the roster has been year over year.
Seven's the number.
Seven.
Kane, Murphy, DeBrincat, Kubalik, Dahan, Hagel, Kurashev. There you go, seven.
Yeah, look at this. We can
so go. Seven out of 16. All four.
16.
Out of all the skaters.
Out of 27 qualifying players, seven.
So there's gonna be nine guys in the lineup that didn't make that list.
Yeah. There you go. I'm sure like the turnovers is similar every year for the last several years because that's the way things are going.
I feel like we talked about this once on a podcast last season where we were talking about how what's the last team that you know that had huge, massive, like half the team changed and they went on to do well other than Vegas, you know, being created. Like what other team had that many roster changes year over year and then went and did well? Like it's not Tampa or it's not Pittsburgh. Both of them had, you know, like 2 years leading up to with like most of their team stayed the same. The Avs, it's not going to be them.
Well, it's
the 2010 Blackhawks.
No, they had a pretty decent,
like from 10 to 11,
number 2009 there, didn't they?
10 to 11 to 12 to 13.
I would say the like 2000s Red Wings before the salary cap. That's like the salary cap dictates all this stuff now.
It's a little bit of like a chicken and egg type of argument because good teams don't change over their roster because they're good. You keep all your players when you're playing well. If you're bad, you get rid of your players.
Sure, so, but how many, like the Penguins are a perfect example before they won their back-to-back cups. They were pretty much just mediocre. You know, they were making the playoffs and occasionally getting kind of far, like getting wherever, but not exactly exploding. But then they just magically happened then. And there wasn't a huge big turnover between. Magically. I'm going to stop using
that. They didn't magically. They added Phil Kessel and Justin Schultz and Ryan Dumoulin and Matt Murray.
Like a couple of people. Like not like maybe at most a handful of people, not over half the roster.
Okay. Conversely, look at how many teams change the coach and then go to the final in the middle of the season.
The Dallas, same St. Penguins Louis, team.
Penguins. Yeah.
The Blues. So
what matters? Yeah. Dallas, Blues, Pittsburgh.
It's easier to change one person than it is a bunch of players.
And I think the one thing that I come back to a lot, I feel like I come back to this more and more as I get older, is that sports are just really fucking weird and weird shit happens a lot.
Amen.
And it's a lot more random than I think like the advent of all the additional statistics and analytics in all sports that's coming out. I think people are doing a better job of quantifying and making like qualitative statements about what wins and what does not, but these are still human beings. There's still a significant amount of variables involved, and sometimes shit just works and sometimes shit just doesn't.
That's the most accurate thing I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, that is accurate.
All right. And there's one more question I wanted to get to before we get out of here. It's from Cameron Lindsay is at WX Man Cam. He wants to know. They want to know, I guess I should say. A player you think could have a breakout season and a player you think could regress. Shepard, go first. Player for a breakout season and a player for a non-breakout season.
Breakout season, Kurashev. Only 16 points in his rookie season. If he's playing with Kubalik and Jonathan Toews, he's on I've way more than that. Regress season? Marc-Andre Fleury. I don't think there's a way to go up for him especially again, the Blackhawks, the Golden Knights weren't the usual Golden Knights defense last season. Maybe, sure. But the Blackhawks defense is going to make that defense look like the 2019-20 defense for Vegas, which was one of the best defenses in the league.
I feel like Jay's going to hold a grudge against me for
oh, forever. You doubt my team, I doubt you. My babies, my precious babies. Don't, like, yeah, no, it's all right. Alex Pietrangelo, Alex Pietrangelo didn't become Pietrangelo until the past.
All right, and then Betsy, go ahead and tell us why Mark Stone's going to regress this year.
I mean, he might, actually. So, regression. It's really hard because not many people did super. Like, the only people that did exceptionally great last year were Kane, DeBrincat, Fleury, right? Yeah, I think Fleury might be the only one that can regress, really. Like, Kane might regress a little bit just because of general age, but not, like, a lot. Like, it would be just a tiny bit. DeBrincat might regress points-wise, but the rest of his game will pick up, maybe-ish. And for breakout, I agree. I think Kurashev might have the best chance, but we're also high on him. And I actually think Hagel could do, depending on where he is in the lineup. For some reason, I think he could have like an Andrew Shaw in Montreal kind of season if he's played with the right people.
Mill, go ahead.
So for regression, people may not like this, but I think if Patrick Kane is still playing with a nagging injury and playing a lot of minutes over an 82-game season, he might see some regression. But that's just because of the injury. That does worry me a little bit. And for a breakout season, I got to go with Dave and my new guy, Adam Gaudette.
Let's go!
Who's, you know, I'm going with the over on 8.5 goals, baby. Get 9 out of this guy this year.
Gaudette gang.
Yes. That's my guy.
Well, I don't want to pick Adam Gaudette as well because I've obviously made my planted my flag on that one as well. I had another player, and as I was scrolling through the roster, I saw, oh, you know what? Kirby Doc is going to be the breakout. I think Doc's going to do it. I'm trying to put aside the pessimism. I think there's a good talent there, and I think he's going to do it this year. And I'm the regression and. Dominic Kubalik, I feel like there's going to be I feel like he's just going to be maybe more this year than
he was last year. He's nowhere to go up but up.
Yeah, I was like
Taves back. Well, I got on his line.
To Betsy's point, like there was a lot of guys that it's hard to find people to regress from last season because there's a lot of regression across the board in general. So
There's not that many players to go down from last year.
Yeah. I guess, I don't know. There's just.
Yeah, but you're just that. You're wrong with Kubalik again.
That's
if
fine.
He's got Taves. If he's got Taves back, then he's going to be great again. He's going to get back to 30 goals.
It wouldn't be the first time I've been wrong, and it would certainly not be the last. I encourage all the hate mail from all the Dominic Kubalik fans out there. So
Dominic Kubalik bandwagon, let's go.
You're going to get like 50 letters from Shepard.
Okay.
You need a fancy alliteration for your Kubalik thing.
So Shay and I will be the Kubalik bandwagon, and you guys can be the Gaudette gang, and we'll see who comes out on top.
Gaudette gang for life, baby.
That's not exactly fair because one of those guys...
Hey, that's who you chose. No, that's who you chose.
That's who you chose, yeah.
All right.
Watch Kubalik go down tomorrow.
I swear, if Gaudette scores 50 points, I'm going to be the most obnoxious person.
And you'll have the right. We'll accept it graciously.
Will you?
I mean, I'll try.
I will make sure you don't accept it graciously. That's how obnoxious I will be. All right.
I just asked for 9 goals.
Bill's being totally rational with his
Yeah, I know. He's like, look, my going up is he might get to 9.
Look, as pessimistic as I am, it's only because I care.
I mean, here, I guess like It's Adam Gaudette's. We'll set a new career high in points. He's at 33 right now.
We could do that.
35.
All right, here.
35 with 26 assists.
All here, right. let's do this. More. This is maybe this is how we'll decide this. Either it's either more points by Gaudette or more goals by Kubalik. I feel like that's a good. That number could be about the same.
Yeah, depending on who's because if Taves and Kubalik and Kurashev are together, I mean, they're all going to get some.
Yeah, Kubalik's going to get top line minutes, and Gaudette's probably going to be down on the fourth. So I feel like that's a more maybe Gaudette up to the third until he ends the season on the first line.
But the overtime goal counts for 2 points on the sports book.
We're going to handicap this so well for ourselves.
Yeah, you guys don't mess with me. That's all I do.
All right. Yeah, I'm locking this in. We're going to do this. We'll revisit this throughout the season.
We're taking Gaudette out for Greek food.
Yeah. Perfect. All right. So before we get out of here, I want to do just real quick, yes or no, everyone in the group. We'll go left to right as I'm looking at it on my screen. Blackhawks, a playoff team this season. Betsy, yes or no?
Yes, wild card.
Shepard?
No.
Mill?
I'm going to flip my switch, and I'm going to say yes on the back of the fourth line. God, that game. We're going to get this playoff spot. Let's do it. Kirby Doc's turning it on.
I'm also going to throw myself in as a yes, so we'll see where it goes. Any other
Dude,
thoughts?
Tequila shooters with Colleton.
That would be fun, actually. I bet he'd be fun to drink with.
Oh, I'm sure.
And does anybody else have any burning thoughts from around the league or anything hockey-related in general before we get out of here?
I just got one little
win the President's Cup, baby.
Mine is just that I'm really glad to hear the ESPN hockey song.
You and everybody else on Twitter. That is all I saw. From 6 o'clock to 6:30, that is the only tweet I saw.
You got me nostalgic, Dave. I was going to dig out my PS2 and listen to some Sum 41.
Nevertheless, I'm dressed for the occasion.
Yeah. It's Mill 182, and here's the situation.
Bessie, do you have any other hockey things you wanted to say before we put a bow on all this?
No, just how do you – so in the East, do you think – in the Atlantic, do you think that the Bruins are going to be able to do what they've continued to do now that, oh my God, Krejcik's gone?
Define what do you mean by
like
be good?
Yeah, be good. So you know how always? People keep comparing the Blackhawks cores with the Penguins, the Caps, and the Bruins, because they're all semi the same age. And I think the Caps are not going to be good this year. The Pens core is pretty hurt this year. And then the Bruins are starting to trickle, their stuff is coming down too. But people kept going, why can't the Blackhawks be like the Bruins? Even though the Bruins haven't won anything since 2011. And I'm like, I think they're getting to the age where maybe the Bruins won't be good again, but I don't totally know.
You dare doubt the majesty that is the perfection line?
I love Pasternak and I love Bergeron, but
you love Marchand.
No, and I love McAvoy. So it's an interesting proposal because again, a lot of Hawks fans kept pointing to the Bruins as maybe we could be them again, and it's like, well, they haven't done anything. So is this their year? Are they starting to trickle down, or have they done a better job?
I certainly have significant questions about their goalie situation because yeah. Tuukka Rask, I guess he said he's only playing with Boston, but he's not under contract. So I don't know what the hell. I haven't seen anything about that situation in a while.
I kind of trust Ullmark because he was good with the Buffalo Sabres. Not great, but good with the Buffalo Sabres, which means he can be great with an actual defense.
That's fair. I guess maybe this is the year they lose in the first round. I feel like they're going to make the playoffs.
Oh yeah.
Barring significant injuries to multiple key guys, I think they'll be in the playoffs, but I could see this being a year that maybe they end up in the 3 or 4 seed and get knocked out in the first round. Although that may require the Toronto Maple Leafs doing something. So no, you know what? Fuck it. Toronto's going to ruin it for everyone. And Boston will make it to the second round again because Toronto sucks.
You know what though? Boston, I think they're going to be kind of shitty actually, but going back to Pittsburgh and their core being hurt, them and like a 70-year-old Jeff Carter hung 6 on the Lightning tonight. So, I mean, like, I think they'll be okay once their guys come back. Not great, but I think they'll be okay.
Well, you got to trust Sullivan. He's a great coach.
So. Yeah, absolutely. That's kind of the idea.
Must be like, nice, right?
Because everybody looks way less good without Sidney Crosby next to them.
Yeah, just ask Chris Kunitz.
Oh, dude. Well, we got him here when he was like 101, so.
And I think he's now an assistant with the Hawks, right? Isn't he
still here.
Yeah, he's doing something with the organization.
Good. All right,
well, I think that's going to do it for this year's episode of Musings on Madison. I know Chef's got to get back to his Vegas boys are skating or playing against the I don't know if you guys had a chance to see the show they did before this game with
yeah, it was awesome.
A Golden Knight fighting a Kraken, and I want to go see a game in Vegas. It looks very Vegas and just ridiculous and over the top, and it looks like something that's worth going to see. So yeah, I think that's going to do it for this episode. You know where to find us all. I'm at @SCH_DaveM. Mill is at @Mill182. Shepard's at Shepard Price. Betsy's not on Twitter, but her stuff is at secondcityhockey.com under the name LBR. That's where you can find all of our stuff. We have a shit ton of preview contents already at the site. There's more coming on Wednesday. If you're reading this or listening to this podcast, there you can go back to the website right now, and there's probably even more stuff there for you to read. Then we'll have our usual previews, recaps, the games all season long. You can follow along with the games at 2ND City Hockey on Twitter. We'll have game threads up so people can hop in and talk the games with us and everyone else in the community. And we're hopefully throughout the course of the season, we can get more people. We're happy to answer questions. So hop in the comments, ask us some questions. We'll discuss them on the pod. We'll be down there talking ourselves as well. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And one thing I forgot to mention as we were talking about all these hockey things, from being at that White Sox game Sunday night with 40,000 people losing their goddamn minds for 4.5 hours, I am so excited for hockey with full stadiums again. I don't think I realized how much I missed fans and fan atmosphere for sports until going to that game. So that's going to be pretty cool as well. Yeah, I think that'll do it. For Betsy, for Shepard, for Mill, thanks to all of you guys for hanging out. Thanks to you for listening. And I don't know what the hell's going to happen this season, but we have to end this the same way we always do. Go Hawks.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.